Anyway, the message today is we've been going over the heroes of faith for this summer, and it's been a really fun series. We've got to learn about all these different heroes of the faith, from Noah, and we looked at Ruth, and we looked at Joseph, Jesus' earthly dad, and we looked at all these different superheroes. But the one thing that I realized that we haven't covered as we're coming to an end of this series is we haven't covered the supervillain. Every superhero needs a nemesis, right? They need a nemesis to pull off the story, so that there's a story of good and evil and all that. And in the Bible, we actually have a supervillain. Did y'all know that? So today we are going to be looking at this supervillain that is intertwined in this story of God that we've been looking at, in these different superheroes' lives, and the reason that they're viewed as heroes of the faith. So this supervillain is one that he's lurking around. He's always looking for some way to take the crown of glory from God, and so far and forever he will always be unsuccessful. But I figure that we need to look at the supervillain so that we can understand the schemes that he's trying to pull, and any information that we can learn about our enemy is going to be beneficial to us, right? That's like a military strategy, is to know your enemy and know their weaknesses so that you're able to overcome them. So whenever you guys, we talked about this morning in the story of God a little bit, I mentioned it at the end, whenever we think of what God created first, what's the common answer? What did God create first? You're in the class, so you don't get a say. What did God create first? What? Angels. Angels. That's the correct answer. You're not supposed to say that, though. You're supposed to say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's the first thing that he created. But we learn later on that the angels were there, and they were singing praises to God as he was creating the heavens and the earth. So we know that God created the angels first, and that's kind of a cool thing that I never thought of, because I was kind of snarky whenever I started doing this lesson with a Bible study that I'm in on Thursdays. He's like, so what did God create first? I'm like, that's easy. Genesis 1:1, God created that. Nope, he didn't. He created the angels. So God creates these angels, and then they decide that they're going to cheer on God as he's creating the earth and everything in it. And they're there cheering. And then one of the angels, named Lucifer, which means bright morning star, he decided that he wanted all the praise from the angels. He wanted to create things, and he wanted to be above God. So so Satan let his own pride and everything get the best of him. And I want to look at Job 38, verses 4 through 7. I think that may be up there, where we get to learn about this. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. This is God talking to Job, who's going through all kinds of stuff by Lucifer. He says, but who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars, the angels, sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So we can see that further on, we think that the first thing created was the heavens and the earth, but God actually created the angels first, and they were there just cheering him on. And I'm trying to think about how exciting and how cool that would have been to been there with the angels and watch as God started creating this stuff. Like, who is it? How did God think about things like creating this universe and then creating all these different planets and all these stars? And how did he think of here on the earth to use flowers to purify the air? I mean, how did he think about that? How did he think to have this big rock up in the sky that the sun is reflecting off of to give light at nighttime? I mean, I wouldn't have thought of something like that. That's just kind of cool to even think about how he arranged all these different things. And the earth's axis is so close as it's going around the earth that if it were to even move by an inch, then it could be destroyed, either pulled away from the sun, or it could get too hot and burn up. So everything is like exact of how he created it. He used bees to fertilize the flowers. I mean, all these different things he had to think of to make all of this that we see around us work. And I think that that's pretty cool how he came up with that stuff, and it would have been neat to see that all coming into being and see the first time whenever darkness has some light and then the planets start to come together and the water is separating off of it and all that kind of stuff, and to see that happen, I think would have been a pretty cool thing to see. But yet but people can look at all of this stuff and the way that it's all mechanical and works so well together, and they can say there's no God, that's all mythical. There was a big bang that just, you know, exploded, and then the Earth was just the right amount away from the sun, and the moon was up there and it shined off of that, and they want to try to explain it all away as something random. But I look at that and I'm like, how can that be, that everything is supposed to be random? It's too precise, it's too well thought out. So I believe that there was intelligent design behind the whole bit. And then I think, how did he think about that? I would have been cheering on God at the same time whenever the angels were, because I find that pretty neat. But this one angel, he decides that he wants that glory for himself. He wants to put himself above God. And Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, tells us this in Isaiah 14, verses 12 through 14. How far are you fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn? How you are cut down to the ground, you laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God, and I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mountain of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud, and I will make myself like the Most High. So Lucifer, this angel, sees what God's doing, decides he wants that for himself, and he's going to put himself up higher than God. He wants to make himself like the Most High. And not only does he just take himself and want to make himself on high, he goes around talking to angels, and we learn later on in Revelation that he took one third of the angels with him to go up against God. Do you think that they beat God? No, he created them. They didn't stand a chance. What were they thinking? So he casts them all out of heaven and sends them to earth, is what we learn from the Bible. So it didn't pan out so good for him. So we learn from this story of God that God is this perfect and holy and righteous God, and he can't be in the presence of disobedience or sin, this rebellion that Lucifer had come up with. He couldn't be part of that, and that's why he had to cast them out of heaven. But then what do? Next thing you know, God he's created everything, and then he's created the first man, and he's created the first woman there in the Garden of Eden. They're living this perfect life that we talked about this morning, which turns out to be running around naked in a hammock eating fruit all day, is the way that that was viewed. But there was this perfectness about the earth at the time. And then Eve is out one day, and she starts talking to a serpent who turned out to be Lucifer in the form of a snake. And he starts talking to Eve and telling her, hey, you should eat from this tree. And she says, God says that we can't eat from this tree. We can eat from any other tree in the entire garden, but we can't eat from this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Satan's like, you'll just be like God. It's not a big deal. You should try this. And so she does. And that was where the first sin happened. And then she got over to Adam, and she says that, hey, you need to try some of this fruit. It's really good. And Adam tells her no, like 15 or 20. Okay, it wasn't in there either. I wish it would have been that way. So I could place more blame, but that's not the way that it worked. Instead, Adam takes of that fruit too. So from the beginning of what we would call time, I don't even know what you can call eternity or infinity, from one direction to the other direction, somewhere where Satan was created, he wanted God's glory. So from that point of his initial sin, he has been trying to lead people astray. He has been against God from that time. And then whenever we get to the place in our time, in our history, where Adam and Eve are there, Satan has now tricked them. And it doesn't stop there. All throughout the biblical history, all throughout humanity's history, we can see the story of Satan interweaved in our lives. So Israel has fallen many times. They're God's children. We have Satan coming into them, and he's whispering into the ears of the leaders and into the people and telling them to be disobedient to God because he is the deceiver. We know that he's there, and we know that he was there with Jesus, right? He didn't go away or anything. Let's look at Matthew 4, 1 through 11. I may have put that in there. Matthew 4, 1 through 11. I don't think that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be Matthew 4, 4 through 11. But we'll go here. This is right after John was John baptized Jesus, after Jesus said that he needed to. It says, then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil, by Lucifer, Satan, whenever he was cast out. In verse 2, and after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. And then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. What is this? Am I reading the same thing again here? So it's just labeled wrong. Okay, well, that's where I'm confused. So, but he answered them, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And then the devil took him up to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels over you. And on, I just said the promise line. He will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. And that's a reference to something previous in the Old Testament that Satan was quoting and trying to trick Jesus at the time. Jesus said to him, again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to a test. And again the devil took him to a high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to them, all these I will give to you if you fall down and worship me. And then Jesus said to him, begone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. And then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and were ministering to him. So we know that Jesus was fully man, he was fully God whenever he was here from Scripture. So I think that Satan must have been there trying to tempt that human side. He's not going to tempt the God side of him. He's trying to tempt him in the flesh, and he was completely and totally unsuccessful. He failed at that. One of the things that we have to remember also about this supervillain is that he has been around since before creation. He was created back then, so he's had all of this time to be honing and working on his skills. It's deceiving people, lying. He's gotten really, really, really good at it. And people, including ourselves, we keep falling for it day after day after day. All of our superheroes of the faith, they've all fallen for Satan's tricks and lies also. This Satan has brought down kings. He has brought down entire nations by disobedience to God. If Israel had followed what God said, I believe they would still be here today. They would have been here the entire time, not come back just like God said that they were. I think that people are just disobedient because they've been lied to by Satan. And I think that he is just very good at doing evil. He's scheming. He is speaking to these people in their ears. I think of that scene from The Passion of Christ where the character playing Satan in that movie, he's always like working in the crowds. He's there whenever Jesus is being beaten on and walking up the hill. There's always this Satan. Satan's there in the garden. He's always there whispering and talking, and I believe that he actually does that to people and says, hey, you know what, that lie is not so bad. Look at what's going to happen if you tell the truth. If you tell the truth, that's going to affect all this other stuff, and it's going to be bad for you. So this little bitty lie is going to be so bad. Or, hey, you know, it's okay to steal that little thing right there, because if you don't, you know, you can't afford to buy that. So if you get it, you're going to be happy. So if you're happy, everybody else will be happy. And he's just always there whispering in people's ears and telling them to disobey God. And with this big giant being, this angel that was fallen, that he looked at what God did, creating everything, creating him and everything, and he's still determined to try and beat God. Where is our hope? I mean, how can we have hope knowing that really there's nothing we can do to stand up against this supervillain in our lives? And we're right. There's nothing that we can do alone to stand up against Satan. He's too big and he's too powerful for us. We don't have the willpower to stand against him. But today I want to share three important things about Satan and his demons. Because in the end, we're going to win, but that's one of the points. I'll get to that point. The first thing that's important for us is to recognize exactly how big Satan is. He is huge. We want to minimize him. We want to draw a little cartoon with a pointy tail and little horns sticking up, and that's Satan over there, that cute little red guy with the tail and all that kind of stuff. But Satan is big. He's massive. He is this destroyer that has brought down so much. This is a being that, again, watched what God did there in amazement and then still said, you know what? I want to take his crown. I want to be up above him. That's the Satan that we're dealing with. And then we want to just kind of, you know, dismiss this Satan, go, you know, I've got Jesus, and Jesus is by my side, and Satan can have no authority over me, and we're right about that. But they're still going to be trying to come with these attacks. If not here, then it's going to come from up above in the spiritual realm. And I want to read what Paul told the Ephesian church in Ephesians 6, verse 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. That's not here. That's what we're up against, is this big, mean, evil supervillain. And we know that we're going to face the temptations, and we're going to face destructiveness, and at times it's going to be downright scary, and that's why we need to have Jesus, who we will talk more about next week. So the second thing, that's the first thing. The first thing is we need to recognize Satan is big. He's bigger than us. We couldn't fight him. We couldn't learn enough karate to beat him or anything like that. But the second thing is that we can't defeat Satan alone. I talked about that a little bit, because we're not big enough or powerful enough. And I want for us to realize that there's no hope for us against this character, this angel that thinks he wants to be better than God. But I don't want to leave anybody without hope, because I think that there is one single hope. And that hope can be found in the one true God. It can be found in his son, Jesus Christ, that came here because he wanted to save us. He didn't come to condemn us. He came to save us. So where all of this evil stuff and this big, big angel that is against God is, we have this hope that can be in Jesus. And he's going to be the main topic as we end our superhero series next week. We're going to look at Jesus, so I'm going to leave a lot of him there, but we can't do this alone. We can't fight this supervillain alone. We need to have Jesus. And in Jesus is where we find hope, we find love, we find that he's enough, and we find that even in his human flesh, he stood up to Satan there in the wilderness, and he defeated him there in the wilderness. And we can also, we can overcome these different temptations with Jesus' help. We have to rely on Jesus, or else we're not going to be overcoming anything at all within ourselves, because he's too big. God gives us the armor that we need. God gives us all the tools that we need right here to be able to defeat Satan, but most of all, we need to have Jesus, which brings me to my third point here today. God, the Satan is huge. We know that we can't defeat him alone, and we also know that he's the loser. Satan is not going to be the winner. We have seen what God's plans are in the future, and it does not include Satan winning, and it never has included Satan winning, and Satan has never stood a single chance, because God created him. He created us. God is the most powerful being that has ever existed and ever will exist, and he's the same God that already took Satan, cast him out of heaven. Next, he's going to cast him out of earth. We read that Jesus is going to blow him out of the water, and that it's going to be an awesome time. I don't know if it'll be as awesome as creation, but to see what's going to happen, we know that Satan's not going to win. So we don't have to fear him as long as we've got Jesus to protect us, and Jesus to rely on, and Jesus to have faith in. So I don't want us to be like so many of the people before us and not trust Jesus to be there for us and to be what we need to defeat Satan in our lives and all the different whispers and the things that he wants for us to do. We should be looking to God's will instead of our own reveal, because eventually we know that Satan and his minions, his demons, the other angels that he talked into following him, God is going to cast every last one of them into hell, but he's not only going to cast every one of them into hell, he's going to take all the rest of his followers that are people also, and they're going into hell also. And we do not want to be one of those people. So instead, I want to be like Jesus, who followed God's will, and he avoided the temptations, he overcame them, he used scripture to tell Satan what God's word actually says, and he didn't fall for his lies, he didn't fall for his deceiving. So I want to be more like that, and I want to stand with God here on earth and also in the spiritual realm. Whenever we're fighting those spiritual battles, then it is. And I feel like even doing this talk right here, as easy as it was to do this morning, today my brain is so scattered as I'm sitting here talking to you guys, and I think that is part of that spiritual realm stuff. God doesn't want, or Satan doesn't want us to hear this. He doesn't want us to hear that he's already been defeated. He doesn't want to hear that Jesus is our only chance of surviving from this lifetime into eternity. So I believe that there's definitely a spiritual battle that's going on all the time around us. You guys ready to do battle? Anybody? Let's use one of our tools. Let's use prayer. If any of you guys want to come up and use the altar, you are welcome to do that. Otherwise, just stay where you're seated at, and we'll just pray together for Jesus to be there for us whenever we need to overcome these lies and deceitfulness that Satan's going to throw at us. So let's pray.